And now joining us via phone from New York is Todd Rosenbluth, Senior Director of ETF and Mutual Fund Research at CFRA. Todd, always a pleasure having you on the show.
Thanks, Nate. Good to be with you and with Connor as well.
So, Todd, we are going to bounce around on a number of different ETF topics today. And first, we were just visiting with ETF.com's Laura Krieger on marijuana ETFs. As you know, AdvisorShare has recently launched the Pure Cannabis ETF. So MJ now has some competition. Any strong views or opinions on this space? Do you think this AdvisorShare's ETF has the potential to compete with MJ?
Well, I think it's great that we see competition. It gives investors, it gives advisors more choices when they're comparing and contrasting ETFs instead of just flocking to the only choice that's out there. I guess a couple of things to note. The new product, YOLO, charges one basis point lower. That's 74 basis points versus 75 basis points for MJ. Again, basis points is not the end-all, be-all. When we took a, we do not cover either ETF, so let me be clear on that from CFRA's perspective. But when I looked at the holdings from the fund's websites, there is a notable difference between what you'd find in the portfolio. That's much more than the fees. And, of course, the stocks drive an ETF's performance, not the underlying fees. And so your larger holdings in YOLO are about half the weighting that you'd find in MJ. And not it's coincidental, we'll find the same thing happening. The larger holdings in MJ, like Aurora Cannabis, which is a roughly 10% weighting in MJ, it's a roughly 5% weighting in YOLO. So stocks are going to drive these respective ETFs. We don't have an opinion on Aurora Cannabis right now, but if we did or if an investor did, you'd certainly want to be on the right side of that 10% versus 5% weighting and look under the hood.
Todd, I completely agree one basis point shouldn't drive the decision-making in investing in any ETF. But do you think these ETFs will just go back and forth on fees, or do you think maybe some other competition comes in and perhaps undercuts them both?
Yeah, it's inevitable that 74 basis points is still a premium fee. You know, we've seen thematic ETFs that have come out for 60, that have come out for even lower than that. I think the 5G product that came out earlier this year, FIVG, is even lower than that. So now the door is open. The SEC has greenlit a new ETF. In fact, they actually greenlit the first of these ETFs since MJ had a backdoor way of converting from a Latin American real estate ETF a little over a year ago. It's inevitable. There's other products that are in the filings. I'm sure you talked about that with Laura. She's been covering that very well at ETF.com.
I like your use of the term greenlit in talking about marijuana ETFs. Todd, on this topic of ETF fees, there are a few recent stories I'd love to get your quick hot take on. The first is SoFi. So they recently launched the first free ETFs after fee waivers. And I know you saw this Wall Street Journal piece about how SoFi essentially forced some of their customers into these ETFs in the portfolios they manage for these customers, which isn't the end of the world, right? A number of asset managers do this. But the issue here was they may have forced some taxable capital gains in the process of doing so. The question I have is, do you think this sort of highlights the potential conflicts of interest that can exist with asset managers using their own funds and just the overall pressure the ETF fee war is putting on everyone?
So I don't view it as a conflict of interest. I think it's inevitable that we're going to see asset managers that are launching products use those products within their fund family as long as they adhere to various criteria and there's a due diligence effort. And so these are low-cost products that SoFi offered. They are well-constructed based on what we can see of them when we look at the holdings. We, again, don't cover this yet, but when we look at the holdings, you're going to get a growth tilt towards large cap, well-known companies from within. I think it's perfectly appropriate that they are using these products the same way that we've seen JP Morgan use the products there, the same way that Schwab's own ETFs are available and used within Schwab portfolios or Vanguard's are used in Vanguard portfolios. What I do think it highlights, though, is fees, again, should be the end-all, be-all for investors. If you're going to trade down away from something that now that costs 3 or 4 basis points to something that's zero, you're obviously incurring a cost in making that trade, and then, you know, from a trading cost perspective, but also you're potentially incurring taxable costs as well. And so we do think these low-cost products are going to gather assets, but we think investors need to understand what they're getting, understand how it fits into their broader portfolio, and make sure they're working with their asset management, whoever's running the portfolio, to make sure that they're owning what they want to own.
You mentioned J.P. Morgan and on this topic of low-cost products. What about the J.P. Morgan Beta Builders U.S. Equity ETF? This thing costs 2 basis points. It's the cheapest ETF on the market, not using fee waivers. Are you surprised this doesn't have more in assets yet? I think right now it's a little over, what, 30 mil, maybe close to 35 mil. I thought for sure this thing would have $1 billion invested by now.
So I think it will have $1 billion invested in it likely by the end of the year. J.P. Morgan has historically seen money move into these beta builder products in the third or the fourth month of its history. We've seen that with Japan, with Canada, with Europe. The European products, BBJP was, I guess, the first of those. BBCA was the Canada product. Now, some of that money, as I think we talked about beforehand, came in from J.P. Morgan's own clients. The money was moved in, and then it's gained a following afterwards. There's due diligence that needs to be done to have that happen. I would expect that. So I think I've said, you know, on Twitter that we think we're going to see the SoFi product hit $100 million first of these two, and then we're likely to see BBUS hit $1 billion first between that. These are going to be very popular products, despite what we at CFRA think that investors should go beyond the expense ratio. Cheap is winning out across the board. It continues to be a number one factor when investors are doing their homework, if they're doing homework at all, when choosing an ETF. We'd expect these products to be popular, and we think we're going to see more of these products that are in the low single-digit basis point range.
Our guest is CFRA's Todd Rosenbluth. Todd, a couple of other fee stories I wanted to ask you about. First, last week, Vanguard formally announced fee cuts on 21 ETFs. And I saw a stat from Bloomberg's James Seifert that this impacted $662 billion in assets and will save investors an estimated $88 million annually. So just like that, nearly $90 million is going back into investors' pockets each and every year. What's your reaction when you hear numbers like that?
I think it's amazing for the investor experience. These are well-established products from Vanguard. We're not really seeing fee cuts the way that you would from other products, where you're seeing strategies that are not popular that the asset manager is trying to jumpstart demand. These are products where the fees are coming down because of scale. So Vanguard, on an annual basis, like anybody else, reviews the fees, but because Vanguard is set up differently, the fees go down when the assets come growing in the door. We periodically will see the fee actually tick up if there's ever outflows on a year-to-year basis. You've got 3 and 4 basis point products within the equity and the fixed income space. You could build a well-constructed fund-to-funds portfolio using these Vanguard products the same way you could with an iShares suite of products or a State Street suite of products. It shows why we're continually seeing money moving in to ETFs because of the broad asset allocation approach. You know, we think it's wonderful, and we wrote about this when it first came out. CFRA did a couple of months ago when the prospectus came out, or the annual report came out, and we saw a lower fee for VOO and a couple other Vanguard products.
Todd, you alluded to Vanguard's business model, and obviously right now iShares is the leader in the ETF space, but can anybody compete with Vanguard's business model longer term? And I'll tie this into the last fee story I wanted to ask you about, which was we recently saw the iShares Core MSCI EFA ETF, ticker IEFA. It surpassed its sister fund in assets, the iShares MSCI EFA ETF, EFA. And what's noteworthy about that is IEFA has an expense ratio of 8 basis points, and EFA an expense ratio of 31 basis points. But these ETFs basically do the same thing. And look, clearly iShares understands investors are going to eventually move to the lower cost product. But is this their way of competing with Vanguard? I know Bloomberg's Eric Balchunas tweeted, if you don't cannibalize yourself, Vanguard will.
Right.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think, you know, iShares launched these products, IEFA and a similar product, IEMG, the emerging markets product. These were lower cost alternatives to the EEM product, and you mentioned the EFA. And they were doing this, we think, in response to Vanguard having success with lower cost products. So iShares now offers them too at a similar fee structure, different exposure, of course. Which we can put aside for the moment that you shouldn't just choose between IEFA and Vanguard's developed markets ETF. But this is in response to where the industry has gone. I think it's, again, really interesting to see that more institutional-oriented investors are choosing the lower-cost product that is tied to an MSCI benchmark. You really have to be competitively priced or be highly thematic to be having investor interest. And again, these are the topics we're talking about for the right reasons. This is where the money is going, into thematic strategies and broad asset allocation products.
Todd, moving away from fees, you talk a lot about the importance of investors needing to look under the hood of an ETF, right? Look beyond fees and really make sure they understand what it is they're buying. And on that note, you recently wrote a couple of really interesting pieces. One explained how investors don't necessarily need to wait for some predetermined period of time before investing in new ETFs, like 3 years or whatever. And then the other piece was that investors don't need to wait for new ETFs to reach a certain level of assets before investing, especially for ETFs holding something like larger cap U.S. stocks. My question is, do you think new ETFs are getting a fair shake from investors? You know, we were just talking about Vanguard chopping fees and these iShares ETFs. It's obviously extremely tough for new ETFs to compete. But do you think there's also perhaps an investor education issue here with new ETFs?
So we at CFRA rate about 1,500 ETFs with a overweight, market weight, or underweight opinion. So we cover everything regardless of its asset size, regardless of its length of time. It's typically a couple of months before we start covering an equity or a fixed income ETF. So we're trying to give investors and advisors the tools to be able to choose products. In that piece that you, one of the pieces you alluded to, we highlighted there's 9 products that are less than 3 years old that have $1 billion in assets. Now, some of them are the JP Morgan beta builder products we talked about, but not all of them are competing on fees. The other piece you talked about, we wrote that investors should be looking at products regardless of assets under management. We highlighted products that could hit the, that are below $1 billion in assets, but that we have a positive view on, the products from WisdomTree, products from Invesco that are, we think, are not getting the right investor attention when we look under the hood and we look at the cost structure. There's a lot of great products that are out there. There's some good new ones that are coming out. There's a lot of noise that's coming out as well, but it is in the investor's best interest to choose beyond the expense ratio, beyond the age of the product, and beyond the assets under management. Those are easy buttons to be able to do, but the better products, the better performing products are going to be driven by holdings. And we, again, we think investors can do that on their own. They can work with a third party like CFRA or other tools that are out there.
Again, we're visiting with CFRA's Todd Rosenbluth. Todd, we have a few minutes left before we let you go. We're now almost into May, which is hard to believe. What have been your 2 or 3 biggest ETF surprises this year? Whether positive or negative, these can be on flows, performance, launches, whatever. What's caught your attention?
So 55% of net inflows as of last Thursday went into fixed income ETFs.
Wow.
They're less than 20% of the overall market, but there's been demand, and it's been across, in a wide array of different areas. So TLT, which is a 20-year treasury product, has seen significant inflows in the month of April. We've seen BNDX, which is an international bond ETF that Vanguard offers. We've seen mortgage-backed securities, MBB, to name just a handful of the products that are leading the charts. And those are three different investment styles. We've seen short-term bond products that were very popular in 2018. Some of them are still gathering assets. The floating rate treasury product from WisdomTree, I think it's USFR is the ticker, JPST, JP Morgan Ultra Short Bond ETF, again, remaining popular. We're really pleasantly surprised that there's been broad adoption of fixed income ETFs. We cover over 200 of them here at CFRA, and we're really excited about the growth that's happening in that space. So that's one of the themes. I'll pause. I don't know how much time we have to either offer.
No, anything else on your radar?
Well, the second thing that is surprising is that even though this, you know, the stock market is up over 15, close to 20%, using the S&P 500 as my reference point, low volatility ETFs remain popular. They were popular in the fourth quarter of 2018 because investors got nervous. But SPLV from Invesco, USMV from iShares, among other min or low vol products, are really continuing to gather assets. It again shows you that not everybody is roaring into the bull market. We're heading into a time that tends to be seasonally weak in May, and investors may want to rotate into these strategies, but it seems like to some extent they've already been there for much of the year. And we're encouraged by that investors are staying loyal to some of the themes, even if the market is showing more of a risk-on environment. It shows you that, you know, some investors are using ETFs as trading vehicles. Others are using them as a replacement for individual stocks or mutual funds as a core position. And reducing your risk profile has been quite popular within the equity space to start 2019. We're in almost in May, and I can't get the year right.
Well, Todd, we'll have to leave it there. Excellent stuff, as always. Really appreciate all the work you do covering ETFs. Look forward to visiting again soon. Thank you.
In here, you guys have a great rest of the show.
That was Todd Rosenbluth, Senior Director of ETF and Mutual Fund Research at CFRA. Again, one of the best in the business covering ETFs. Highly recommend giving him a follow on Twitter, @ToddCFRA.